From Pakistan and Nepal to Thailand and the Philippines, through India and Bangladesh to Sri Lanka and Indonesia, the countries of Asia face a common crisis. While populations keep growing, food production is falling behind the demand for food. Asia's challenge is to find ways of avoiding more widespread hunger. The challenge is to have enough food for the future. It can be done, but action is needed now. That's the reason for the theme for this year's World Food Day.
For 1990, the World Food Day theme is Food for the Future. This was selected because the importance of environment and sustainable development has been becoming more prominent, both politically and socially, if we look at the global context of today.
Edgardo Valenzuela of FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. A Filipino, he's responsible for coordinating international activities for World Food Day.
The theme, Food for the Future, conveys the importance of being able to conserve today's resources while trying to maximize production and trying to see if new breakthroughs in biotechnology to be able to produce and ensure that people have not only access to a balanced diet, but also to be able to conserve the fragile ecosystem of the world, being able to satisfy our current needs without compromising the future generations.
To satisfy our current needs, but what are our current needs? How much are we producing? How much are we consuming? To find the answers to these vital questions is the job of FAO's Global Information and Early Warning System. Its head is Peter Newhouse.
For 3 years now, world production has fallen short of utilisation, and as a result, global cereal stocks have fallen. They're now down to a level where they were at during the world food crisis in the early 1970s. So this is obviously a situation which cannot continue for much longer. Our current forecasts show that production in 1990 will probably match consumption. So we are more optimistic this year, but we see little replenishment of world cereal stocks. So basically we're in a very precarious situation where we're depending largely on the outcome of harvests in the ground to feed the world's population.
But food production and consumption varies from one region to another. What's the situation in Asia?
Asia has performed relatively well, and cereal production in Asia has kept pace with population growth, so Asia has become increasingly self-reliant.
Farmers throughout Asia are to be congratulated for what they've achieved, but production must continue to increase each year. Western Europe and the United States, the major exporters of grain in the past, have been reducing their production. Their surplus grain has almost gone. So, says Peter Newhouse, Asia must look to Asia for food for the future.
I think that the low-income countries will have to rely increasingly on their own resources to meet their consumption requirements. It will not be possible for them to depend on traditional exporting countries to make good the deficit. When you add to this the increasing problems that these low-income food deficit countries have in financing the food imports, then this adds weight to the argument that they should rely increasingly on their own resources.
And Asia's farmers could continue to feed her peoples by increasing productivity of their land and their animals. And they could do it without necessarily degrading the land further, without destroying more forests.
Yes, of course, I believe it can be achieved, and it is a realistic goal. But we have to be very specific. We have to see in terms of agroecological zones. And in those agroecological zones, we have to take into account the type of soils, the rainfall pattern, the population density, the surrounding economic environment. And within each agroecological zones, taking into account all these factors, then we can see what appropriate intensification pattern should be followed.
The firmly optimistic opinion of Dr. Shikala Shikaka, who works with the International Food Policy Research Institute. But he qualifies his optimism when he says that more priority must be given to agriculture in national policies.
If there is no any political commitment, nothing will be achieved. So that is the first step to take, the creating of political institutions that are really committed to development. And those institutions alone will be able to direct correctly resources. The only conditions, politics and economic policies have to be corrected.
So what needs to be done to help farmers to increase production? Well, first, the soil must be protected. Without soil conservation, there can be no productive agriculture, no food for the future.
If we're to get soil conservation programs to take off and be more readily accepted by farmers, I think we have to tie conservation in more closely with production systems. We have to look for conservation systems which not only conserve the soil, but also provide something for the farmer in the short term. They can't wait 20 years to get the results for their labour.
David Sanders, a senior soil conservation specialist at FAO. So what does he suggest? Has he seen any really successful soil conservation? Where farmers are developing new cropping systems, for example?
Soil conservation measures have to be tailored to the conditions under which you're working. For instance, there's a very long tradition of conservation measures in Asia, as we all know. And we've recently started a very interesting regional project in Asia, which is covering six countries, based in Indonesia, and it's covering southern China, Thailand, Indonesia itself, Malaysia and Papua New Guinea and the Philippines. And it's establishing a soil conservation network for that part of the world. Rather than try and introduce or develop entirely new systems of conservation, we're looking at some of these old systems of conservation in the area and trying to improve them and develop them for present-day conditions.
But times are very different now. Not only is there a greater need for what farmers can grow, but there's less land available now on which to plant crops.
Of course, what's happened in Asia, there's been a tremendous increase in population over the last 50 years or so. A lot of the very steeper areas, which were once under shifting cultivation, have now come under permanent cultivation. Nowhere to shift to anymore. So we have to try and improve the system so that farmers are able to cultivate these areas continually without losing all their topsoil.
Soil erosion has also been controlled and crop yields have gone up where farmers have adopted agroforestry, planting certain trees and shrubs to form hedges, barriers to wind and rain, and growing crops between the rows of trees. The foliage can be cut to feed livestock or to mulch the soil.
Agroforestry is really suitable for the tropics. If you look at the natural conditions, you find trees were an important component of that environment. And we believe putting trees back into the environment, back into the landscape, back into the farms, would constitute a more sustainable approach to land use and sustainable in terms of economics as well.
Agroforestry helping to achieve sustainable production of food for the future, says Amari Getahun. He works with ICRAF, the International Council for Research in Agroforestry. ICRAF is based in Kenya, but its research is proving useful in many parts of Asia.
Under intensive management systems, the trees are not allowed to develop a big canopy. We only speak of a more hedge approach. The benefits that we get is the physical barrier that densely planted rows of trees would bring by bringing a terraced effect. And we now know, instead of physically developing terraces, you can develop biological terraces effectively much quickly than we thought otherwise.
Greater production from livestock is also necessary, as more people want meat and milk. Poultry and pigs are important for many farmers, but it's sheep, goats and cattle or buffaloes that probably have the greatest potential for increasing our food for the future. Why? Because these animals, the ruminants, don't compete with humans for what they eat. This is certainly the opinion of a senior livestock production officer at FAO, John Hodges.
That's why I think ruminants for cattle, sheep, buffalo, goats, we have got to somehow devise systems which are using the natural vegetation, bringing in the herbage which otherwise would not enter the human food chain, and yet at the same time intensify the output by both better output per animal and more animals.
And John Hodges foresees great opportunities for managing crop and livestock together so that each helps the other. Animals eat crop byproducts and grass growing under trees, along field edges and alongside irrigation canals. The crops benefit from the animal manure. This is what's called integrated production. And already there are examples where this has been done very successfully. And some communities in Nepal and Java, for example, have practiced this for generations. It's a traditional experience born of Asia.
I think some of these older traditional communities have techniques which we should examine in more detail. Cooperation is needed in order to increase food production and provide a higher standard of living for the world. The advanced technologies available from the developed world need to be integrated with the more traditional approaches of people who live much closer to the soil in larger numbers in the developing world. More adaptation is going to be needed in the future.
Rediscovering and improving traditional farm practices can undoubtedly help to increase production of food for the future. So can reducing some of the terrible and unnecessary waste of crops to pest and poor storage, and sometimes carelessness after they've been harvested. New technology can and must also play a part, of course. And new technology need not be complicated or difficult. Take the making of bread. Millions of people in Asia have abandoned eating their traditional foods, rice and maize, buckwheat, lentils, cassava, all to become eaters of bread made from wheat, wheat that most of Asia, except northern India and parts of China, cannot grow, and so it must be imported. The reason is that bread is convenient. But why wheat? Because only wheat flour contains a substance that allows wheat dough to rise, making the bread light and pleasant to eat. But now FAO has developed a way of making good light bread without using any wheat at all, only flour from cassava or millet, sorghum, or whatever starch crop is grown locally.
Starch by itself doesn't have the ability in a dough to capture gas as a wheat gluten does. So we simply came up with a technology based on pre-cooking flours or starches made from indigenous crops so that they would be capable of holding gas, then adding the remaining flour, which we wanted to use, again from indigenous sources, and forming a dough, or in some cases a batter, adding yeast to it, allowing it to rise in the normal manner of making bread, and baking it. We were able to make a bread product without the use of wheat.
That's Morton Satin, one of the world's leading bakery technologists. He now works for the FAO, and it was he and his team that developed this wheatless bread. But what about the taste? Will people eat it?
In most cases, many people prefer the taste of cassava, as an example, to the taste of wheat. There is a difference in texture. Breads made with the wheatless bread formula are heavier, but consequently they last quite a bit longer on the shelf than wheat bread does. Civilization has been improving bread for the last 6,000 years, and we have only been working on this for about 18 months. So we have a little way to go, but we have really, in fact, taken a giant stride forward.
A giant stride forward. One giant stride. But there'll need to be others. Giant strides in the priority given to agriculture. Giant strides in the resources provided for those to whom we look to provide our food for the future, our farmers. So can all this be achieved in Asia? Head of FAO's Global Information and Early Warning System, Peter Newhouse.
Oh yes, I think it's quite possible. What we need is increased emphasis on the food crop sector, realistic pricing policies, incentives to farmers, and markets for their products. Given the will, it's quite possible for countries to feed themselves, given the will and given the resources.